let's get started. Welcome to Taking Control of Your Finances. This is a panel discussion. I'm so excited that everyone is here and that you've decided to take your first step towards control and taking control of your finances. I'm Sonia Sigler, and I developed this event and discussion to help you get started, and no matter what your situation, just to help you get started. So whether you're paying off student loans, or you're trying to save for college for your own kids, or you're putting the pieces back together after divorce, or whether you're trying to decide whether you have enough to retire, I just want to help you get started taking control of your finances. I want to thank the panelists for joining me. They're going to introduce themselves in more detail in a few minutes. Tatiana Enhorning of Raymond James. She's in Toronto, Canada, and I know we have a few Canadians on the line. And Hope Feller of Northwestern Mutual. She's in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area. And she, Jennifer Belmont Jennings. She's of Hightower Advisors in the St. Louis area. And I wanted to seek out women financial planners and wealth managers in particular, and I'll explain why when I get to my money story. So I just want to have a little bit of a disclaimer. I know we can't leave the lawyers out of the room. I want to make sure that you all know that no one will be giving any investment advice here today. If you want to follow up with anyone and learn more about how they can help you, you'll be given contact information so that you can follow up with them directly. So I want to put this discussion in context for you. This particular topic of taking control of your finances is part of the Practical Career Mentor series of webinars and content, all of which are designed to help you reach the next level, whatever that is for you. Most of the content and the webinars are based on the materials in my books, Welcome to the Next Level, What's Next for My Career, and book 3 in the Practical series is Set Yourself Up for Success. So just to give you a sampling of the other webinars included in this series, there's things like Overcoming Imposter Syndrome or Anatomy of Your Compensation, where I break down the different parts of compensation, you know, from your salary to bonuses to whatever, and authentic personal branding, among others. So in the discussion today, the material we're going to cover is based on one of the tips I share in the success process of Set Yourself Up for Success. And that tip in particular is pay yourself first. So my life's purpose is to inspire others to take action, not simply make you feel good after you hear one of these things. I'm not Tony Robbins. My superhero persona is Practical, and I specialize in practical, actionable advice. And more specifically, I want to inspire women to take action that will help them reach the next level. So whatever that is for you, I want to help get you there. So hopefully what we discuss today will give you some direction regarding what you need to do or concentrate on next, whether it's trying to save or rebuilding after divorce or death in the family, whatever that is, if you're trying to determine whether you have enough to retire, I want today's discussion to help you take that next step. So whatever plan or step you take put together won't happen overnight. So let's get started. So taking control of your finances, we're going to cover a few topics around what that entails. And if we can impart any one message today, it's to simply take that one step towards reaching that next level for you. Take that step, take one step every day. So whether it's saving more, spending less, or just taking care of one of those little things that's been niggling in the back of your mind. Like yesterday, I made my property tax payment, so I can stop worrying about that. You get the picture. So what are we going to cover today? We're going to cover my money story so I can put this all in context for you of why it's important and why this topic came up as something that I can help women do. We're going to talk about subject matter experts. So I mentioned Tatiana, Hope, and Jennifer. They're all going to tell a little bit about their background and what they do. So we'll introduce those to you in more detail. And finally, we're going to spend the remaining time on four particular money topics. And those are where to start, building confidence beyond your 401k, and we'll talk about the Canadian version of that as well, and then leaving a legacy. So those are the four areas we're going to go into more detail on and answer questions as we go along. Now, the outcomes for today, completely simple. I want to make it possible for you to start the money conversation wherever you are in your life, with yourself, with your parents, spouse, kids, whoever matters to you the most, or whoever is in your legacy circle. I want you to be able to start that conversation today. It's going to be uncomfortable. I'm not going to lie about that. It will be uncomfortable to start with, but it'll get more comfortable the more you talk about it. And then I want you to be able to start educating yourself and building your confidence with regard to making decisions and putting together a plan for you. And last, I want to, the point of this and a takeaway is to introduce you to other subject matter experts, and especially women. And as a bonus for staying to the very end, I have a free gift for everybody, and it's not investment advice. So don't be thinking that. Before we launch into more details about my money story, I want to talk about the why of what we're discussing and why it's important to have the money discussion and educate yourself and surround yourself with experts. So why is discussing money important? Two reasons. First, I want you to get paid what you're worth. And second, I want you to be able to reach your money related goals and retire when you want. So whatever that is for you, your role in this process to take control of your finances is to be informed, educate yourself with regard to like salary and benefits. So that's the get paid what you're worth part. This means you may need to do a little research around the compensation. And in fact, I have another webinar on that topic exactly. So I think I call it anatomy of your compensation. And there are articles on that as well, because that's such an important topic. Today's topic and discussion is really about the second thing, how to reach those goals and whatever those are for you. So I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but you're going to have to define those and what that success looks like for you. One of the big gender and money barriers here, which is why we're talking about this subject, is gender pay equity. So this is heartbreakingly illustrated in this study with MBA graduates. So of the graduates they surveyed, over 50% of them were women. Of the graduates coming out, only 7%, single digits, negotiated their starting salary, even though 70% of those hiring managers expected them to actually negotiate their salary. So what did that translate to? A starting salary of an average of $7,000 lower than their male counterparts. And over time, that means around $1 million less in compensation for those female MBA graduates than the male graduates. And that means 8 more years of working if you're going to translate that into work. So although I work with both men and women, I really, really want to help women overcome this parity problem with the pay gap. So it's not just about negotiating the raises, it's about saving the money and building wealth. So that's why we're having this discussion today. And now for the kind of crazy part of it, I'm going to share a little bit more about my money story. And it's long and winding, and it's not all pretty. So the impetus for this particular discussion today came about because I belong to a CEO peer-to-peer networking group called Vistage. And I've been a part of that since 2012. So I've seen a lot in the last 8-9 years. And I've seen investment tips shared among the men. And it is mostly men. And I don't mean like stock tips like buy Tesla. I mean like friends and family opportunity level investments, startup investments, like how do you get in on the ground floor of something like Uber or eBay or Blue Bottle Coffee. I was offered the opportunity to participate in these kind of investment opportunities. And I listened to many, many pitches, and I belong to a couple angel investor groups. But most of the time these offers were floated by when I was house rich and cash poor. So I couldn't partake in those particular opportunities, but I was hearing about them. And what I realized is I didn't see a lot of women in the room. The ones that were there were either a CEO or they were on the VC side, on the investor side, but I didn't see a lot of women investing. And so that's what got me wondering, why don't women trade these kind of opportunities or have these kind of discussions? Why the radio silence? So why is that? I have one friend, and you can see pictures of her here, Grace. Some of you have met her. We disclose these details. We talk about these topics. And I don't recall any of our discussions where we actually traded investment opportunities like the ones I just mentioned. So we have, since 1985, so the picture over here in the corner of us in the Cal Band, we met when we were 18. We've known each other for, gosh, over 30 years. We talk about money stuff all the time. And I don't know how it got to that comfort level with us, but she's one of the very few friends that I actually have these conversations with. And we've talked about it at all. And it started with, how do you pay your mortgage off early? How much money did you need to amass for retirement? Like, where is that line for you? She's the one who told me that if you make an extra mortgage payment, you can shave like 5 to 7 years off your mortgage. She's the one that told me about investing in real estate through your IRA with non-conforming loans and companies who hold alternative assets. She's also the one who told me about the asinine book publishing models, where you get less than 10 cents on the dollar if you're the author. We discuss what we charge for speaking opportunities and keynote speaking speeches. We talk about PPP loans. We've talked about all these different things. And the last thing we've talked about is the Kiva loan that she got last 2 weeks ago to be able to fund her third book. So what I realize is it's such a unique relationship and that I don't actually have these conversations with other, not that many other women. I've started doing it as part of Wine, Women, and Wisdom evenings. But for the most part, I really run into radio silence when it comes to women in finance. And so why is that? So whatever the reason, I want to change that by sharing a few more details. I could label this whole next part as mistakes were made, but that wouldn't really be the whole truth. Some things were done right, some mistakes were made, but I didn't really start to understand this or make sense of it until I started to look for a financial planner in 2017. And even then, I ended up hiring a money coach to work through some of these things. So just to take care of some outdated beliefs and behaviors. So let's start with the family money beliefs, because I think that's where the root of my understanding and my beliefs and how I behaved and treated money really came about. My dad was a farmer. We were from a long line of Republicans in Congress even. And the message was very clear: conservative, save everything, including your tinfoil and newspapers. Don't spend anything. Grow your own food, make your own clothes, make your own furniture. And certainly don't ask for anything, because you will never, ever, ever get it. And then never, ever, ever go into debt, ever. And wait, the important part, never discuss money, ever. Not how much you make, not how much you paid for anything, nothing ever. So that's the environment I grew up in. Yet there were a couple things that didn't make sense to me. We were the only family in the county that had a Mercedes. My mom worked, she had her own company. My maternal grandparents had their own company. My grandmothers worked, one was a nurse, one was a teacher. My grandmother here, which you can see, lived to be 100. She used Quicken to manage the farm books until she was maybe 95. So it was confusing. I had women manage money, you know, but don't talk about it. So all of those messages lead to, you know, nothing good was going to happen in this area. It was just confusing. So I saved money. I didn't spend it, didn't talk about it. I had about $900 when I went on way to college. And this picture here in the red dress is college. And I didn't know that you could actually keep a bank account open if you didn't have any money in it, because I had spent all my money that first year of school. And then I just closed my bank account because I didn't know you could leave it open. I stayed debt-free until my second year of college, when I had to take out a loan to be able to travel with the San Francisco Symphony Youth Orchestra when we went to Europe. My mom came all the way to Berkeley and we had to meet with a financial aid officer. Talk about embarrassing and talk about anxiety, not having enough money to pay your own way, you know, yikes. So I worked the remaining of the three school years. I spent a year at Mrs. Fields Cookie making $3.75 an hour and 2 years at the Berkeley development office on campus, earning a whopping $5.25 an hour. That was what got me through school. And then law school, I took out a loan my very first year and lived at home. So I graduated from law school with about 60,000 in debt. Today's dollars, it's a lot more, around three times that. I went to SEGA my third year of law school. And the good thing there is they brought in an outside financial planner. American Express Financial Planning or whatever their arm was in the same building we were. Some of those guys came in, they did a lunch and learn. I learned about 401ks and saving money. I learned about making investments in terms of private placements through that as well. And I had, I had the belief that I had to pay off my loans and like every extra little dollar was to pay off that because of that bad debt belief that I talked about from the family money beliefs. So I spent a lot of time doing that. In the meantime, I got married. we learned a lot of things the hard way. Both companies had stock. I went to Intuit after SEGA. They had stock, so employee stock purchase plans. Around that same time, 529 plans were started to save money for education. And those were too new and untried and they made me nervous. So I just started a brokerage account for each kid as we had them. So we just put employee stock purchase plan stock right in there. So Cisco stock and Intuit stock, and we left it in there. We didn't diversify it. We both went to startups, so risky right there. And when Greg's up in the left corner there, when his startup was bought by Cisco, the stock ended up being worth about $1 million. That's when we sought out a financial planning help. And I think at this point we did three things to minimize our tax burden. And to try to avoid triggering the alternative minimum tax. We sought the financial planning advice. We tried to sell our house and buy our dream retirement house with a 3-acre horse farm in Carmel Valley. But that was dependent on selling the Cisco stock that had a restrictive legend on it. Even though the restrictive covenants had been met, the legend was still on there. And then third thing we did at this point in time is we started a private family foundation, so that we would have a legacy of giving and that we would have money to leave to the next generation. All sounds really good at this point, but the more kids we had, we actually put wills and trusts in place. Greg took off time between startups and that dwindled our cash. Then he started playing the stock market and putting almost everything on margin. We invested in oil and gas wells, which his parents had invested in. His dad was a petroleum engineer at Occidental. So it's not like we didn't know what those were about. My grandfather was also a geologist, so we had some knowledge in that area. Then Greg started doing puts and calls, which were all fine and well and mostly profitable until one resulted in a very big call. And then that resulted in about $300,000 of cash sitting there. So we were able to, that was all the money we had set aside to purchase a home in Tahoe. And so that's what ended up buying our second house in San Carlos. We were serial refinancers. So we refinanced our house every once in a while. We put a line of credit in place for remodeling our home. So you can see me and Jasper standing in the kitchen of our remodeled house. So at this point, we have two mortgages. We have one job at a startup with a capped salary. We have stock on margin. We have a call that resulted in all that cash in a second house. Then 2008 hits and all that money on margin dwindled that account down to nothing. around this time we were in counseling. I asked for a divorce in 2011 when neither of us had a job because the startup I was at was sold. And I know very few people know that we didn't actually get divorced until 2017, 6 years later. So I was paying for both houses. I was paying for all our expenses. I basically ran my 401k into the ground doing all this because my salary didn't cover everything. And when I lost my job in 2014, you know, all bets were off. Greg didn't hold a job until, you know, from 2010 on. And he spent all the money out of his retirement accounts. And then creditors started calling me. Why isn't this mortgage payment being made? Why isn't this line of credit pay, you know, being made? So my credit tanked. It was really scary when I moved out in 2013 and went through changing credit cards and everything and basically working with fraud departments to say, do not take calls from this person. Do not add his name to my accounts. And he's since deceased, and he basically died homeless and penniless after 10 years of not working and spending everything from the divorce proceeds. So I know you're thinking, what else could go wrong here? not to depress you, you know, completely, but there is a happy ending to the story. I met my husband Kier in 2016 at his brother's wedding, and I knew his brother and family for a long time, but I'd never met him. And when we met, he had significant assets and was looking to buy a house, and he had a down payment and everything saved up. And I had a house and three kids about to go off to college and a retirement plan, but not a lot of cash. So we both wanted to preserve our own assets. And so we started the process to find a financial planner to help us through this process and to put in particular life insurance to cover the payment if we had to divide assets. And I'll share the financial search criteria that we used, but just keep in mind that it's a sample and you'll need to come up with your own criteria, you know, which you'll have as we go through this. We thought we knew what we wanted in a person. And once we started interviewing people, we changed our mind about that most important criteria, which ended up being youth and longevity, because I'm in my 50s, Kier just turned 50 this year, and we wanted someone who would be around in 20 years when we're ready to retire. So we went with someone a lot younger. We've done two very important things. We've involved our children. So in these money discussions that we put together with our plan, we've had the financial planners meet with our kids and explain how to get started. And at the time, the kids were 16, 18, and 19. So get started with a credit card and build good credit, pay off every month, even if you just put gas on there, max out your 401k, you know, take the matching money, look at the buckets of taxable dollars, and we'll talk about all this in more detail. Tax-free dollars and then a mix of tax-deferred dollars. So we talked about all of that. We've talked about this money discussion with our parents to the extent that they're willing. You can see my mom in here. We've actually, this past year, she put me on her bank accounts and she shared with me and my brother where the wills and the trusts are and all the documents and her list of passwords. And then after going through Greg's sudden death, I find it even more important to have these discussions and put these precautions in place. You know, it was never more poignant than when we were scattering his ashes on the bay and Jasper said through tears, now Dad doesn't have to worry about money anymore. And it's true, but how did it take us all that to get there? One good thing, and I want to end this money story on a positive note, is the private family foundation that Greg and I put in place in 1999. It's still going strong and it's providing a legacy of doing good. And it'll allow me to involve my kids in that legacy and care. And, you know, we'll currently continue these money discussions, especially right now since we're refinancing our house, which is the house that we've lived in for the last year. So I'm going to just end that story there. I'll say a little bit more about some of those things when we get to those topics, but right now I want to introduce the subject matter experts. Today we have Tatiana Enhorning. She's from Raymond James and she's up in Toronto, Canada. And Hope Feller, who's at Northwestern Mutual, and she is in the New Jersey, Connecticut, New York area. And Jennifer Belmont Jennings, she's at Hightower Advisors in St. Louis. So one of the things I want to point out here is that in our search for a financial planner, not a single woman was recommended. This wasn't because there aren't any women experts out there. It's because it's an insular world. And I wanted to showcase female experts for particular in our discussion today. So Tatiana, let's start with you.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me on, Sonia. And thank you for sharing that story again. It's touching every time I hear it. And I have to say, even though it started out rocky and you were taking advice from sort of wherever you can get it, you really did make a lot of smart choices, including the wills and the foundation and teaching your children from your mistakes. I just think it's so admirable where you've gotten to with CARE as well. Yes, I work at Raymond James in Toronto, but as you know, it is throughout the US as well. And I have a little bit of a different background, I think. I actually started my schooling in kinesiology and psychology. So I do have a lot of background more in the personal side of finance, I would say. And I kind of fell into it by accident at first. Both of my parents are entrepreneurs. So I grew up in a household where the feeling of money for us was always feast or famine. It was never secure. It was always up and down. It was the classic entrepreneur situation where suddenly you have a lot of work, so you have to hire a lot of people, and then the work goes down, and then you still have to pay the salaries. And what happens when you want to get close to retirement, or what happens if you want to sell the business? And they were not by any means money experts. And I just couldn't help but notice all these women in my life who are such strong, smart people, but they'd never really taken the reins on their finances. And I noticed here and there things happening throughout their lives. One of the very first memorable money situations that came through my life was on top of my own parental and family situation, was one of my best friends in high school. Parents got divorced when she was in grade 10, so she was 16. Her father was actually in finance, but the mother, they had met in university, and the mother had never worked, as is a lot of people's choice. Just no one ever thinks it's going to be them that gets divorced. And when they did, and she was in her late 40s, she then had to start from ground zero. And that was so jarring for me to see the father just living his best life as he always did without skipping a beat, and the mother having to start her entire life and career from the bottom. Then after that, I actually had a mentor in finance who sort of started explaining to me what it was all about, started encouraging me to start taking my courses and everything. And once I did, I realized just how relevant money is to everyone. The point being, everyone has money, but not everyone knows what to do with it. We hear stories all the time of millionaire celebrities, Britney Spears and Dennis Rodman, who had millions but squandered it because they just didn't know what to do, spent it too fast, didn't invest any of it, etc. And then my grandmother was another very poignant example in my family as well. She was married to a doctor. They were never short of money. They lived a wonderful life, but doctors are a little bit notorious for, quote, having money but not knowing anything about money. And that was, he was very stereotypical in that way. They were traditional. He managed everything and he did his best, but he just had multiple people. It was spread over everywhere. It wasn't one picture. And by the time he passed away, much before she did, she now is 80 years old, having to manage everything on her own, completely out of her depth and grieving his death at the same time. So these things were, needless to say, what spurred me to want to help specifically women to help get their goals on track. And if investing's too daunting to do on your own, hiring someone to help you who you feel a connection with. And so that's really where my passion lies, with helping women through financial wellness. And I've joined a team at Raymond James who specializes in guiding people throughout life transitions. So that's really where Sonia and I connected. She's obviously been through pretty much every life transition there is, actually. And I think financial planners and financial advisors can be very key advocates and guides to make sure that what you want is built and bolstered by whatever money, savings, career, insurance, and other securities that you have or can build throughout your family.
Thank you. It was good to hear all of that, and especially what spurred you to take on a career in this area, because the economic impact to women on divorce is just so much greater.
Absolutely.
One question for you, Tatiana, before I let Hope introduce herself. What's the question people should ask financial planners that they never do?
Oh, that's a good one. I think it's very common that people ask the regular ones about the person's education and sort of the philosophy and process, and what's an example of what you would do with my money if we decide to do business together, that kind of thing. But I really believe that the larger money conversation within the whole family needs to happen. So I think making sure that your advisor has the resources surrounding them. For example, if you were to need insurance, or if you are named as executor on your parents' will and you maybe weren't expecting that, is your advisor able to help you guide you through that transition? If a trust was the right thing for you, do they either have connections or their own licensing to help deal with that, as well as insurance? And also, are they willing to help you guide your children and even other family members who you could end up taking care of in your life, which impacts your finances as part of a larger vision and larger goal?
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. Hope, let's hear from you, and I will be your slide junkie here.
That sounds great. Well, thank you all for coming. Thank you, Sonia. It's really wonderful to be here to benefit, hopefully, some women who have been wondering how to save or go about life insurance or planning and what to do. We all have to find someone to help us. There are many ways to do it. Ask your friends, look on LinkedIn, and listen to Sonia's talk, which is so beneficial. I'll start the process and share my slides with you, and you can ask any questions thereafter. Just go back one slide. I'm just going to say hello. I am a wealth management advisor at Northwestern. And I'm going to go to the next slide. So sorry about that. One second. Here we go. Let's get started. No matter how old or how much money you have, your plan to create more financial future, a more secure financial future, should include strategies to do five things wisely: save, spend, grow, protect, and give. Let's dive into each one in more detail, starting with save. I'm sure you have already understood the importance of building up savings today to help you afford a comfortable life tomorrow, but are you on track? Ask yourself, do you feel you're saving enough money to reach your financial goals? Do you know if you're on track? When you think about saving for your future, whether it's saving for a new home, your own retirement, or college for your kids, the best way to know if you're on track is to know with some level of certainty where that track is headed. So let's back up a little bit. Think about what your life, your future will look like 5, 10, 20, or 30 years from now. Think about things like, where will you live? What will your family look like? What are the big purchases you hope to make in the short term and in the long term? How will you spend your free time? Will it be important for you to financially support causes you believe in? Will you be helping your parents or other family members? Here's an action plan. Think about your top three goals for the future: a short-term goal, a goal for 5 or 10 years from now, and a long-term goal. And be specific. Unless you get detailed about your goals, you won't know if over time you're financially on track to meet them. And if you're married, talk about your goals with your spouse. Make sure you're on the same page about your priorities. Once you've got a clear set of goals, you can build a plan to save for them. So now, how much will you be putting away in savings and investments? Generally speaking, you should save about 20% of your income to savings. But in reality, the amount you should be saving depends on the goals we just talked about. So it could be an even higher percentage. An easy way to boost your savings is to add an extra 1% every year. So when you get your annual salary adjustment or bonus, increase your savings by just 1% more if you can. Your wallet won't feel it, but your savings account will benefit. In terms of where to save your money, every person's situation is unique, but generally speaking, the key to breaking down your savings into time is to break it down into time horizons. When will you need to use the money? Short term is for goals that you have over the next couple of years, the down payment on your home or a new car. Save for these in a checking or savings account, along with your emergency money fund, which should be 6 months of living expenses. Midterm is for your money you might need in 5 to 10 years. This is where you may want to put money into investment accounts. For longer term goals, 10 years or more, you want to be as tax efficient as possible. You may consider an annuity or an investment account. Permanent life insurance may also be a good option. While its primary purpose is to providing a death benefit, it also accumulates cash value that grows tax deferred, of which you can utilize to meet other financial goals. If you use the cash value, it can reduce your benefits. You'll also need to consider the tax consequences when determining which vehicle is best for your goals. And then finally, retirement. For this important goal, you want to be directing money into vehicles such as a 401k, a traditional IRA, a Roth IRA, or an annuity. A quick note about if you're a 401k. I know that today people seem to be changing jobs quite often. If you do, and if you participate in your previous employer's retirement plan, you'll have to decide what to do with the money in that 401k. Keep in mind that a 401k gets special tax treatment. So as you consider your options, you'll have to follow certain rules to make sure you don't get hit with extra taxes and penalties. You could leave the balance where it is if you're happy with the plan's performance and your old employer will allow it. You could roll it over into your new employer's plan. You could roll it over into an individual IRA. You could take the cash, but most planners would not recommend this because you'll be hit with taxes and penalties and it'll really hit into your balance. There is a lot to consider and a financial professional will be there to help you. Today, I'm going to help you get a handle on some of the fundamentals of investing, core strategies that even the largest institutional investors rely on to help them navigate the often choppy waters of investing. I'm going to share with you the 5 strategies that can change how you market and help you be as much a confident investor as we can, regardless of market direction. Consider, 1, why a sound investment strategy starts with your end goals in mind. Why balancing risk and reward is an important part of investing. The components of a balanced, diversified investment program. Why discipline is crucial to the investment process. And finally, experience building momentum in your individual investment plan. there's a lot of information and noise out there about the markets. Even when you feel comfortable with the basics of investing, it takes time to make sense of it all. And it's difficult to be sure you're making the right choices to be successful. That's why it can be helpful to find a financial professional to help navigate these waters. Okay, so far we've covered spend, save, and grow. Next slide, please. Let's move on to protect. Here's the wake-up call. Your goals take money to achieve. And for most of you, the money will come from your paycheck, correct? Now, what would happen if something unfortunate happened to you? Of course, this isn't the kind of thing that any of us want to think about, but let's face it, the life you envision for yourself and your family is based on what you're earning now and what you expect to earn in the future. Imagine what would happen if you lost that earning power. There are three basic health threats to your long-term ability to earn and protect your income: disability, a long-term care event, and death. And when we talk about protecting income, we also think about your life insurance. As with disability income insurance, you may have some life insurance coverage through your work, but is it enough to protect the financial well-being of the people who depend on you and your paycheck? The answer depends on what you want it to cover if you couldn't be there to financially support your family. Does your spouse need income to pay the mortgage and daily living expenses? Will your family need childcare funding? Are there student loans to consider? Will you help fund your children's college education? Would you want to be able to cover the cost of some or all of your children's weddings? Do you expect to support parents, kids, or other family members in the future? Do you want to leave an inheritance to your children or grandchildren? There's a lot to consider, and many insurance options are available. A financial professional can help you determine the best insurance for your needs. There are two basic types of life insurance, term and whole. While both serve roughly the same purpose, there are big differences between them too. I would be happy to go over these options and others when we speak individually. It's quite a lot of information. As with most things, we can scale your life insurance to be affordable to you and your family. Whether term, which is for a certain period of time, or whole or permanent life insurance, which can last your lifetime, many feel comfortable when these needs are addressed and their family feels secure. Then disability insurance, or a way to protect your paycheck. Most people don't realize how easy it is to become sick or injured to the point where they can't work. But the fact is that 1 in 4 people will be disabled at some point in their career. And most disabilities are caused by relatively common occurrences like back problems, pregnancy, complications, cancer, and a heart attack or stroke. While we're talking about the concept of protecting us against the unexpected, we should also mention long-term care coverage, which I am specifically designated in. How many of you are currently providing care to a loved one or have done this in the past? Many families are spread out and do not live close by right now. Can we expect these working family members to be able to help us when our time comes? As you think about the cost of long-term care, keep in mind that these costs are today's average costs. The potential impact of inflation over the course of 30 years can be enormous. If we assume a 5% inflation rate, here's what you may expect to pay for for a year of long-term care services. That's 1 year. Now, of course, you don't know what the actual rate of inflation will be, and the cost may depend on where you live, the skill level required to deliver the necessary care, and the availability or the demand of those care providers. The question to ask is, where is the money coming from if we don't plan ahead for this kind of cost? Give is the last point. With your own time and money in order, it's easier to support others in need, whether you want to help close at home or reach beyond your immediate circle. if time is what you have to offer, you could take a few hours to volunteer in your community or even a few days to help abroad. If your passion for giving has a bigger price tag, you can think long-term. Save over time and establish a scholarship or start your own nonprofit organization. In addition, charitable donations can be tax deductible, so save your receipts. They can help you during tax time. With Northwestern, the first step is to get to know you so we can help you identify your personal, professional, and financial goals. We'll make sure we understand what's important to you and your loved ones, where you are today, what steps you've already taken, and where you want to be in the future. And then we'll use that all to your information to do a financial to find out your financial situation and help you create a complex plan to reach those goals. It's all about the plan. If perhaps you are looking for help and you want to know where concretely your plan starts, it's your custom details that cover where you've been and how much money you'll need for retirement. Thank you so much for listening to me. I hope you've learned something. And if you have any questions, please reach out. I'd love to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Hope. That was a really great overview. And I think one of the things that was very clear when we started interviewing financial planners is asking people what their goals are. And I think people come in thinking they have some nebulous retirement goal in their mind, and getting down to the nitty gritty is really important to be able to put a plan in place that's going to be appropriate for reaching those milestones. So thank you. And I love, and you didn't mention this, but you have three daughters. So I have three sons, and Hope has three daughters. So teaching them about this, and I'm glad that you can as a professional in this industry, it's really excellent.
Yes, you have to have those dinner time talks.
Right? Right now, our dinner time talks are all about refinancing and what that looks like and what that entails, giving away your firstborn. Okay. Last but not least, Jennifer, let's hear from you. And actually, let me go back one question. Hope.
Yes.
What is the one thing that people should ask you but never do when they come to interview you as a potential financial planner?
This is the question. How much does it cost? Everybody wants to know. Because I lead with a plan, does the plan cost anything? And actually, it's part of the process. You can sit with me, you can do a plan, and the recommendations is what has the compensation for a planner at Northwestern. So don't be afraid and don't wait. Don't cogitate. Give a call to a planner, sit down and do a plan.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, I don't have any qualms about asking how people get paid. I want to know what the structure is of what they're recommending and if it's tied to that. So that's great. Okay, Jennifer.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm Jennifer Belmont Jennings, and I'm a wealth advisor at Hightower Advisors in St. Louis. We're nationwide, but I'm in a St. Louis office. And a little bit about me, those are more bullet points of things that Sonia and I talked about. It's not really my blurb, I'm an attorney by background. I used to practice law. I did estate planning and family law, and then transitioned over into this industry back in 2013. I graduated law school during the financial crisis. So I started when it was a good idea to go to law school, and then halfway through, turned out to be a really bad one because they said, guess what? You borrowed all this money, nobody's gonna have a job. And I was like, well, great. You know, there's no turning back when you're halfway through. So I was fortunate enough to be employed, but it really wasn't, I didn't have as many opportunities for growth as I really anticipated as I had envisioned when I decided to do that. And so at the time I was looking, I was applying at, you know, for compliance positions at firms, looking at trust companies, looking at other law firms. And I had a friend whose dad was in the business, and I asked him, you know, if he knew anybody in corporate, and he said, well, have you thought about being an advisor? And I was like, no, I don't want to go sell things to people. And I don't, that's not my thing. And he was like, no, you're not going to have to do that. And so I said, okay, well, I'll get into it. So I actually really ended up liking it. Where I was, it turned out long-term wasn't going to be the right fit. And then I ended up where I am today, which is a great hybrid. I really use a lot of my legal background as well as my financial background. So I'm also a certified financial planner. And I really, it's been interesting having that outlook on both sides. So I used to draft the plan, send my clients off on their merry way, you know, with their fancy leather binders. And you don't always know what's going on the other side. Whereas I'm on this side now, and I know exactly what was going on over there. How do we implement everything? Because it's amazing how many loose ends are out there. And even as a planner, you know, over and over, we're telling clients, you know, is there a beneficiary on your bank account? Is it in your trust? Things we can't necessarily control. Even when you do everything you should be, there's almost always going to be some little something out there that somebody forgets about. Like, I'll have clients be like, oh, I totally forgot I had this IRA from like 12 years ago. And I'm like, this was really relevant to a lot of the planning that we've been doing. So what, you know, where I work now, our tagline is wealth rebalanced, and it's wealth, like W-E-L-L. And I remember when that first came out, I was like, I get it, but what does this even mean? But during the pandemic, as everything has really changed, I've really seen how like your well-being encompasses more than just your financial well-being. There's so much more to it. And the concept of confidence and everything really came out. I started writing a lot during the pandemic about non-financial things. I mean, I know people love reading all my tax law updates, and it's like great, you know, cocktail party conversation. But I really saw a need for more than just like this really complex education. I was starting to see how much people don't know. I started doing research, especially with women, and how they're still overwhelmingly handing over finances to their spouses, thinking that their spouses know more than they do. And that's not even true. I mean, I explain to just as many men as I do women, like, what is a marginal tax bracket? And I started wanting to, I know the word empower is such a like trending word, but it's a good word. And I, knowing that 8 out of 10 women at some point are going to start being on their own, are going to be on their own from divorce or dying before their spouse does because their life expectancy is better, I wanted to start making women particularly more comfortable with money, more comfortable asking questions. And I'm a really big proponent that you can only have one day job. I don't know anything. It's like when I practiced law, if you were arrested, I mean, yeah, I passed the bar and I did criminal law in that section. I can't get you out of jail. You got to call somebody else. And so I think there's all this pressure, especially on women. Like, we have to know everything, because at one time, right, if you were going to open your mouth in the boardroom, you better be like coming up with the internet itself, you know, or else you were going to have all this sexism and the backlash. But I think some of that is still being held on to, and we think we don't know, we don't want to speak before we're perfect. And so I've really been trying to cultivate a culture of, it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to say, I don't know everything. Sometimes I've got to look it up. And I think that I'm incredibly passionate about that, about the education component. I have a lot of clients who, their surviving spouses and their husbands handled everything. And there's still a trend for that, which is really surprising. And I think it's okay to not be, you don't have to be like day trade. You shouldn't be day trading. Okay. Like, most likely. So I'll start with that. You don't have to be doing everything, but have a basic understanding of what's going on. Where's your money? It's okay if it's not your favorite thing. You know, hiring a planner, it is important. And the statistics show, over time, you do better when you have somebody helping you. I've got clients who come in who are worth, you know, they have $15 million and they've done a lot of stuff great on their own. And we're pointing out like, hey, you know, this shouldn't be in this account because it's a great investment, but it's causing a lot of tax problems for you every year. It's better off in this account. Or even pointing out when an advisor doesn't know the differences of what kind of accounts they are. You know, there's a lot of people out there who pass the Series 7 and give advice. Some of it's great and some of it's not so great. And so it's really been my passion to educate, to help really tie in everything in everyone's lives, like from the estate planning to the tax planning and the investment planning. And I've really enjoyed that. I've really enjoyed getting into more of the sphere of women and talking about this and building confidence, because I think we have to lead by example, and there are not a lot of women. I know, Sonia, you said like no women were recommended, but there aren't a lot of women financial advisors. Like the number's like maybe 20%, some say 18. I know that there are very few female certified financial planner lawyers. That is like a very, very small number. You know, we are representing a very small minority, but the women are going to be around longer. And
exactly.
They need to feel comfortable talking about money. And we have social media now. And you know, I think, I know I'll just go ahead and answer the question that you were going to ask me anyway.
Exactly.
you know, our clients do ask a lot of questions, and we give them everything up front. I mean, we are full disclosure, transparency on fees. How are you paid? You know, people come in and say, well, I'm not paying anything. It's like, yes, you are. Like, do you know how much that mutual fund costs that, you know, your advisor has you in? It costs money. They're not doing it as a charity. Yeah. But I think people should be asking more, like, are you a fiduciary? I know that is the hot button word, acting in someone's best interest. A lot of our standard in the industry has been what's called being suitable. There's a big difference between like, is what you're recommending to me suitable for me, or is it in my best interest?
Right.
And so
that's a great distinction.
Yeah. And it's huge. And not everybody has to do that. Like my firm is all based on the best interest standard. Like it was started in response to the financial crisis and all the craziness going on. You know, when you're a CFP, like you've got to do that. So I think that's one thing I would challenge everybody to ask. Like when you're interviewing an advisor, ask them what their standard is when they're recommending investments for you. And also, you know, they should be disclosing their fees up front very clearly, but ask that question. I just posted that on LinkedIn today and Instagram. Right. Like, it's okay to ask that question. You need to know.
Don't shy away from asking that question.
Yeah, no.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, I appreciate your introduction and learning a little bit more about you. We have four topics that we want to cover. And what I did was I brought up questions. So I'm not just, you know, texting my kids or something. I have the questions on my phone. So let's go ahead and get started. So, you know, like let's start at the beginning. You know, I was lucky enough to hear from experts when I was just 25 and starting out at that job at Sega that I mentioned. And then I had a chance to start over again in 2008 when we lost everything. And then again, after getting divorced or moving out in 2013, so let's chat a little bit about when we should start and, you know, can we invest even if we have debt or high childcare costs or student loan debt is what I'm hearing from clients right now, is that they've been in practice as lawyers or professionals 7, 10, 12 years and they still have kind of crippling student loan debt. So how do we get started? So Tatiana, let's start with you. So when you're chatting with people, what do you tell them in terms of getting started? Is it too late for me? I hear a lot of the people who signed up and asked questions are like, I don't even know where to start. And is it too late for me to even, you know, get on this savings train? So let's start the discussion on there.
Yeah, I remember us talking about this topic when we first met, because it's one of the most common questions that I get from people who haven't already started, but for some reason, women are starting a lot later than men. And I think it's exactly the reason that you were talking about before, Sonia, where other men sort of talk to their dads, and they even like boys in university talk about like, oh, like let's buy a Tesla stock or something. Like it's kind of fun for them. And maybe they grew up trying to buy one stock with their dad or something. And I don't know a single girl that does that with their dad. And it is a comfort level. Yeah. So the point being, you really can't start early enough, sort of getting comfortable with your own finances and really owning the management of them. And even if it's something as simple as what you were talking about, I really like using the metaphor of if you were to go on a road trip, Okay, so how do you start when you're going to go on a road trip? Number one is you have to know where you're going. You can't just drive around aimlessly. You're never going to get anywhere. And a lot of people say that their goal is, oh, I want to retire comfortably. But what does that mean? There's no specificity there. There's no time frame. Like, how much do you actually think you need to live on? Figure out that exact number. Have a goal age in your head. Those types of things. Every coach, Sonia, you know this, always says whenever you're thinking of your goal, you have to have clarity around it or it's never going to happen. So the clarity and specificity on where exactly you're trying to get to, either short and long term, as Hope was talking about, is what definitely the first step. And then you also have to know from there, once you know where you're going on your road trip, you have to know where you are starting from. If you know where you're going, but you don't know where you are on the map, again, how is that going to help you? So you really have to do a deep dive on your own finances. This can actually be a really scary step for people. And again, I think a lot of people have, to be honest, their head in the sand, and the longer they wait, the more they sort of have to get a little bit nervous about it. They feel they've waited too long. So there's no wrong time to start, for sure. You can start anytime, and really the sooner the better. But even if you feel you waited too long, still better sooner than not at all. And if your male partner happens to have started already or has started on behalf of the family, it's also never too late to get involved. As we've mentioned, you're going to statistically have to do it on your own at some point. So again, never too early to start taking the reins, start understanding it, start giving your advisor information on what you're comfortable with, on what your risk tolerances are, what your own specific goals are. I actually have clients who are very well off, but the woman just has never been interested, and that's fine. Not everyone's interested, but she's only just realizing now in her 60s that the way that her husband deals with everything with his advisor is much riskier than she's comfortable with. And she never really looked into it before. And it's not too late to change it, but it's good that she's getting on top of it now.
Yeah, I would say it's never too late to start. It's never too late to start having these discussions. I think it's really important that you said, are we having these conversations with our daughters?
Yes.
Or whatever. I know Kier got Apple stock for his, I think, 21st birthday, which he has. So there's some things like that where, oh, maybe if we had done, you know, a conversation, or maybe that's a milestone birthday present. But those kind of discussions, I think, are really important. But there is no wrong time to start. And as I said, I started over 3 times. So I didn't start from nothing, you know, those other 2 times, because I still had money in my rollover 401k account. But it was in terms of cash. And trying to build up, I think it was Hope that said 6 months of reserve in terms of cash. So I think that's important. I want to let you know, I put a document in the chat window for everybody. Jennifer's provided a document to gather all that niggly little information so that you can do a look-see before you start talking to financial planners. So one of the things I had done when we started interviewing financial planners is assembling all these documents, like, do we have life insurance? Who are the beneficiaries? What do you have in your bank account, savings account, brokerage account? All of those nitty gritty details. And then who are the beneficiaries? Is it your ex-husband? In some cases it was. Or are there even beneficiaries designated? So this document that Jennifer's provided will help you gather that information. So if you do start your search, or you do go down the path of finding a financial planner, it will help you gather all that information. Let's go on to building your confidence and educating yourself. So we talk about men and women having these different confidence levels, and that we just don't have these conversations. I think that men and women know similar amounts. It's just that men are having the conversation and women are not. So let's build our confidence in this area by actually talking about it. Educating yourself, which is what we're doing today. And Jennifer, I know you had a lot to say on this, so let's let's hear from you.
Well, I know I said a lot of it in my intro, but really, as just to go back to reinforce the point, men don't really know more about this. You're not just like born with this innate understanding of how the stock market works and how, you know, interest rates and bonds and all that stuff. It takes a lot of time to learn it. I mean, you study a lot, and I know Google has some good information, but Google has a lot of bad information. And, you know, people are like, when I was practicing law, I was like, well, my cousin's best friend, so-and-so said whatever. And I'm like, I'm going to now have to charge you $300 to explain why you should not be getting your legal advice from somebody who's not a lawyer. Right. So
hearing it multiple times helps.
Yeah.
That is the other part for me. Yeah. That was like, okay, I remember, somebody, you know, the last person I talked to said something about that. So,
I think knowing where you're getting your information is really important. There are good resources out there and there are good people out there. But not putting so much pressure on yourself to be an expert, and knowing that, you know, they talk about how men just have more confidence. It doesn't mean they're right. Confidence does not equal being right. Like, I could sit here and act like I'm the smartest person in the world and know on the inside, like, I'm not, or maybe I think I am, but we all know I'm not, right? Because nobody's perfect. We don't all know everything. So I think just trying to mentally get over that hurdle is the first thing to do. And I know there's a lot of talk about like, don't put this all on women, but I'm sorry, we're not going to change the world overnight. Like, everybody in the world tomorrow is not going to wake up and be like, oh, let's like treat women with respect and equally. It's not going to happen. Like, we're going to try and we're going to lead by example. But like, in the meantime, what can we do? We can tell ourselves to be quiet when we start hearing that little voice in our head that says like, don't say anything. And there aren't stupid questions. And I know that sounds dumb, like to say, but what is way worse is somebody in a conversation I had on LinkedIn earlier today is cleaning up a mess because like you didn't want to ask a question later. That is way worse, way more complicated. So try to overcome that mental hurdle, and starting small is fine too. Again, you don't have to master everything. This kind of goes back into the previous topic, but like people will say, but I don't have enough. I don't have enough to invest. That's, you know, first off, that is rarely true. I mean, just go look at what you spend on things. I know everyone's like crazy about the latte example, but it's true. It's a real thing. People buy expensive coffee. The $6 cup of coffee that I get on occasion, $86,000 over 20 years. If I buy that every day. Okay. So maybe I like brew some at home every now and then. You know, you start small, it adds up. And if you take the same amount of money over 20 years in smaller increments and start investing that, you will have more than the same amount of money over a 10-year period if you start later and are doing bigger increments. So you don't have to have like millions of dollars to start paying yourself first, being disciplined, you know, the taking advantage of your 401k plans at work, you know, don't see it in your bank account. That's also helpful. So there are little things that you can do and get into the conversation. There's a lot more on social media going on about this. You don't have to like participate, but we're talking about it. We're talking about it on LinkedIn and we're talking about it on Instagram. And I think there's just more of a comfort level discussing this now. And we all as women in this industry can lead by example and show you that we are out there. Women are out there, and I'm okay saying I don't know everything. So if I can say it, you know, then don't feel silly if you've got to ask me a question, because I mean, you're not born with the knowledge.
Yeah, I think seeking out experts and being able to ask those questions is important. In just a second, I'm going to share my criteria that we developed as we started talking to different financial planners and interviewing them, because I think it's important to see how that can evolve. So once you talk to one and then you talk to next, you educate yourself more, you know more, and then the next time you'll ask better questions. But don't not ask the question to begin with. Ask those questions and get those answers. I do want to say the whole point of this and the tip in set yourself up for success is to pay yourself first. And one of the things I did right, and I'm thankful about this, was I had put money into a separate bank account. So women, I always advocate having separate bank accounts and put money in there, whether it's $10 or $100 each month, put money in your own bank account. And whether it's parity and you and your spouse have them, I advocate having control over your own money somewhere in there and then be able to pay yourself first so that you don't even miss it in your paycheck. So I just want to say add that. And that is one example of one thing I feel like I did right. And I never would have actually had the conversation about what was your biggest mistake and what was your biggest thing done right until we started interviewing financial planners. And one of them asked us that particular question. And it was eye-opening to hear what people thought they had done as a mistake versus something that they had done well. And when you start looking at things that you've done well, it does build your confidence to say, okay, I've made a complete mess of it. I have done some things right in here. So I just want to say that, keep that in mind as you go through and you know, if you're just starting out, Steve, or you're rebuilding after some family event, you know, just keep it simple and start small. I really like that. I want to go on to moving beyond your 401k or your, let's see, the Canadian version is the registered retirement savings plan. So what else is out there? And Hope, if you could just give us a little bit more information. I know you did in your presentation, you talked about the insurance and the long-term care, but tell us a little bit about what else is out there.
So you want to save. You've decided that you can actually save more money than just a little bit because you have your emergency money in your checking account, and now you've decided you want to invest. So you can actually put money into any investment asset. You can do mutual funds, you can do a portfolio, you can do brokerage. But how about the 401k? You want to match with your employer. It's free money, you must match that because everyone likes free money.
All love free money.
If you can't do the max, then you may want to spread your earnings around. There is a cutoff for Roth IRA, but there's other places too. You can actually save an HSA account. It's a wonderful place to put money for possible medical emergencies later. 529
health savings account.
HSA.
Yeah.
Health savings account. Yeah. You think that it's just, you know, for other people, but actually people do get hurt and need money for those items, like when they go to a hospital. So HSA is a good place to save. 529s, your kids want to go to college one day, you would like to help them. Maybe you want to help them 100%, or maybe you'll help them 50%. But the 529, the money that comes in there can actually leave without taxes. So you want to, I know, Sonia, you had said that you put money into a portfolio to save for your kids' college. It may have worked out because you put the stock there. So, you know, you didn't end up putting a whole lot of money, because what happens with the 529 is you don't want to over save, because the money that is not used for education will have
different taxable
difficulty. You'll have difficulty getting it out. Without,
yeah, that's something that scared me. Yeah, about it. I think the other thing is there's different tax consequences to the kids now that they're stuck in those accounts, in the brokerage accounts we have for them. So they have a tax consequence that we didn't really
think about,
take into account, because at 18, now they have to pay taxes on that when we sell it to actually pay for college. So that was kind of a wallop we didn't expect.
I know. So if you have money in a 529, you've already paid for your kids' college and they're not going to medical school, et cetera, you can actually save then for grandchildren. You just save it. So
yeah. So one question here is, what advice do you have for someone who's self-employed? So there may not be a 401k plan to invest in. So then you either have to start your own. I started a IRA for my own business. So I started a separate one that I could put money into that was an equivalent to a 401k.
Yes.
That's one thing you can do. But if you have other advice, Hope or Tatia.
The SEP IRA is fine. You can put money in a SEP IRA, and there's different rules about that. If you earn more money, you can put more in. There is a ceiling as well. Let me just quick wrap up. Yeah, SEP IRA is what Sonia said. All right, so there, and of course you can do brokerage, portfolio, mutual funds, and you can also put money in a life insurance I don't know how deep you want to go. It's a very broad subject. Permanent life insurance actually has a cash accumulation there that you may be able to exercise and take away money tax-free.
So one of the things my mom did when I think, and I'm not sure if she did it for my brother, or if it got lost somewhere in there, but she started a life insurance plan for me that happened to be one that you could have a cash value and borrow against. And apparently that kind of life insurance isn't even available any longer, but that has accumulated. It's only a $20,000 policy. It was meant for funeral expenses when I was living abroad in case anything happened. But now today, here we are, however, 30 years later, it has a cash value of like $8,500. So that was one thing. It was like, oh, I didn't expect that. But that was a great thing that my mom did for me when I was 18 living abroad.
That's wonderful, Sonia. I'm so glad she did that. Way back when they had Gerber baby whole life policies that had, you know, $10,000 cash values. Now you can actually make your kids millionaires when they retire,
right?
Due to the fantastic growth in other riders. So it's quite amazing.
Yeah. Excellent. So I think that leads us directly to the leaving a legacy. So that's our last topic. And this is really centered around how do you know when it's time to retire? I get a lot of the questions that people sent me beforehand is, where is that line? Where is that number? When we first met with financial planners, it was 2 million and then it rose to 3 million and now it's 4. And I don't know what it is now. I have to look at it differently now of, can we live where we want and still pay the taxes, or can we live where we want in a lifestyle that allows us to travel? So I've kind of changed my thinking on a number versus, you know, what our lifestyle is like. So are there different ways of thinking about this? One of the things I think of now, and I'm seeing more articles on of, you know, do you want to leave a legacy of stuff or money spent, or do you want to leave a plan in place and have experiences with your family and loved ones together? And we're starting to do more of that in terms of traveling together and hanging out as opposed to, you know, spending on stuff. And I know I have a picture here of my blue glass collection. Can you leave a different type of legacy with education and discussions and knowing that things have been taken care of? I mentioned that I had a discussion with my mom. This is my grandmother. She's the one that just died in almost 2 years ago at 100. She is holding a picture of her mother with a lake house. And that's one way to hand down property or put it in a trust so that everybody can use it. I mean, for us in particular, I mentioned the private family foundation that we put into place, wills, trusts, estate plans. I've done all that. And when we got divorced, we had to redo all of it. So that was good. The private family foundation, you know, our concerns are financial literacy, which is why this topic today is so important, plus a couple other things. But if you are having those discussions with your family, about what documents are in place, about what plans are in place, that's really important. And if you're not having those discussions, maybe broach the subject of what's in place or this is what we're doing. I do want to let you know, I'm going to schedule another discussion like this with estate planning experts, because I think getting more and more of those questions. But Jennifer, what do you have to say on leaving a legacy?
You know, I think generally speaking, this applies to everything. There is no one size fits all for all of this. Everybody's going to have different circumstances, different needs. Like, you know, you have different priorities and orders that you should be filling certain buckets. You know, there's some people where like insurance is going to be appropriate. Some people it's not appropriate, you know, and so I think that's important to take away from this is that we all have different thoughts and things that might be appropriate for like one person, but not for someone else. So, you know, leaving a legacy, it's huge because it's a great opportunity for family discussion. I know, Sonia, you brought up the Private Family Foundation. Now those are expensive to do. Nowadays, we do a lot of donor advised funds, which are like starting your own nonprofit, but it's like an account that does it. And you make little grants out of it, and it doesn't cost, you don't need a lawyer to do it. Your advisor probably should know about those as an alternative. For some people, a private family foundation may still make sense. Making sure that your estate planning is done by somebody who does estate planning. I see a lot of documents that come through that somebody's cousin who's like a business transaction attorney who was asking me questions about stuff. No, they should not be asking me questions about how to do things. I think people also don't realize that the cost up front really isn't as much as when you have to go to court. People don't realize in different states your state did give you a will. They basically have decided who gets your money. And people don't realize, at least in Missouri, that if you die with children and you don't have beneficiaries on your accounts and in the right places or in trusts, your spouse is getting the first $20,000 and then your spouse is splitting the rest with your kids. And if your kids
are that what you wanted?
Yeah. And if your kids are under 18, they can't inherit money. So it goes into the Britney Spears conservatorship. That's like, I'm sad that happened to her, but it's actually given like a word to what that it, like people understand a little bit more about that process. You're paying an attorney and a conservator and all these court costs to have this money like accounted for every year. And then when they turn 18, they get a big check. So if you had life insurance that wasn't with a proper beneficiary, you know, your kid's not going to go to college if that's what you want. Having the conversations about businesses early, there's so many tax consequences and complications and family dynamics. I think just having family education, we do a lot of family education with our clients because we have multiple generations of clients in our practice. And we bring when they're in college, they're coming in learning about all this stuff. The parents tell us how much they want us to let their children know. We may do a donor advised fund that's like a family one, and they get together and talk about it over Thanksgiving and say, "This is
exactly what we discussed."
And so I think it's very important to talk about that with your family. It's very important to have some kind of estate plan in place. It's important to implement it when you leave that attorney's office. Make sure you do all the stuff you're supposed to do, or you're still going to be paying the lawyer fees and the probate administration costs to get everything in a trust if that's what you need. So I know I'm speaking kind of fast because I think we're
coming. I want to add one thing to what you said that's super important here is you can't just start a trust and then not fund it and not put anything in it and not change the title of things, because then you're just worse off because there's nothing in the trust.
It'll get there. It's just going to go through probate. And so you're going to be paying administration fees. The attorney who's allowed to collect it to get the money when you could have signed a form for free, just doing a transfer on death into your trust.
Yeah. One of the things you said in your overview of checking in with clients, are they actually implementing the plan that we put in place? We actually meet maybe two times, maybe three, if we meet for drinks, with our financial planners, it's a team, and go through where are we on our list and what has changed. So like we moved, we put different insurance in place. So we're just going down the list and working on our things, but we report back into the financial planner so that they know what we're doing and we know that we're making progress on our plan.
Yeah, we do that. Yeah, we review beneficiaries and updates to the state planning laws, like it's time to go talk to your attorney, you know. And by the way, COVID is a great time to now go have these conversations because I think people are thinking a little bit more about death, or maybe they thought they wanted the plug pulled and they're like, wait a second, I could be on a ventilator because of COVID. Like, I don't think I want him to pull it just yet. Let's give me 60 days. I thought 30. That's often a lot of times the first place I send younger clients.
Yeah.
I'm like, great, I'm happy to manage your money and do your planning, but you need to get yourself over to the attorney. And here are some people that we work with, and get this stuff situated before you do anything else.
Right, exactly. So I want to talk about easy mistakes to avoid. So the very first one here is doing nothing. Don't do nothing, do something. So today you're educating yourself, you met a few experts who you could have those conversations with. And the second thing is really stop the comparisonitis. So I see so many people measuring their success by someone else's definition or someone else's yardstick. So you get to define what your goals are and what success means for you as you're putting your plans together. And then the other part is keeping up with the Joneses. Don't hang out with spendthrifts if you're a saver, because it's just going to rub off on you the wrong way. So stick to your goals. So these are just three things to think about as you're going through and you're putting your plan in place. We have a couple more things to cover, and I think I've tried to address the questions that have been asked as we go along. But the takeaways from today are really to start the money discussion with yourself or others as needed. Second, educate yourself and grow your own confidence in being able to ask those questions. I mean, I think it's easy with the document that I attached that Jennifer provided, track your expenses and spending for a month. And then take a closer look at what can be cut or what could be saved, you know, without very much effort. And last, don't be judgmental about this process. As one of my money coaches said, something is better than nothing. So celebrate the something. Finally, surround yourself with experts. So like we're doing today, talk to them. They won't bite. Ask them the tough questions. Ask them for explanations, especially if you don't understand something. And as Hope said, ask them how they get paid. Make sure that you have a good rapport with whoever you end up going with. I think that relationship is really important because it's going to be a long-term relationship. I shared my financial planner criteria with you in the chat window. You should be able to download it. And as you've heard today, no one's going to try to sell you anything. It's all about stating what your goals are and whether their services are a match for helping you meet those goals. And then you can have a further discussion about what's appropriate. So I'm going to give you the contact information for everybody. And then I just want to say, Tatiana, if you have any final thoughts, please share those. And I'm going to share our contact information documents while you do that.
Yeah, I realized I did forget to mention, if there's anyone on the call who is from Canada, we can go through the nuances of the tax situation in Canada. It's obviously slightly different there, especially with the registered plans that everyone was talking about. IRAs, Roth IRAs, and 401ks are different in Canada. We have the registered retirement savings plan as the tax-free savings plan and the registered education plan. So if you or even your family members are in Canada or are moving to Canada and then can't work with an advisor in the US, I can definitely answer questions on that. And the only other thing I wanted to say, which was, I'm really glad, Sonia, that you mentioned that you go through your documents on a regular basis with your advisor. I think one of the misconceptions is people feel that they don't need to get insurance or update their will like until something happens, and then it's almost a little bit too late. You should be updating beneficiaries, powers of attorney, guardianship for your kids, wills, all the time if something changes, or at least looking at them once a year just to make sure, because I think people forget about that. And yeah, just taking the first steps.
Yeah, we tried to do that on Thanksgiving. So not just where is money going for the foundation for the year, but what else do we need to do and look at? Jennifer, last words.
I feel like everybody really covered a lot. You know, I'm happy to answer questions for people. I think making sure you're a good fit with somebody, I think it's okay to talk to more than one person and just commit to start having the conversations and learning more. And I'm like, this is a total plug, but like, you're welcome. I think my social media stuff is on something, but you're welcome to like follow me on LinkedIn or Instagram. I have like a money, I'm like at or not money.t.chablis on Instagram. That's kind of a new page, but I try to just have normal candid conversations about all of this. So you don't even have to be working with me to be part of the discussion and to learn something. So education's my thing. And so I'm happy to share that.
Excellent. Yeah, I think the education is so important. And what we're talking about today is really the first step for people. Hope, last words?
Well, there's a few, of course, call me, get in touch with me by email, LinkedIn, and I'd love to meet you, help you get to know your situation. There's just a few things that you may do to build your money confidence, forgive yourself for past mistakes, just like Sonia said, find easy solutions for gaining more wealth and more money, like deleting some of the apps that you have that you're not working with, and then siphoning that up to saving, leave your credit cards at home, automate your finances so that you can get that money paid first to you rather than paying your bills and have a slush fund at the end where you think you have that extra money, but it's actually supposed to be saved. And then stay in the know where your money is. Know your numbers, figure out what you need to live, how you're going to get that money, and then the money that's left over, put it to work.
Excellent. So I just want to encourage everybody to follow up directly with Tatiana, Jennifer, or Hope, or all three. As I mentioned earlier in the money story that I shared, our search for a financial planner, we interviewed 4 or 5 people before making a decision to go with the particular team we did because they were 20 years younger than us. So I just want to tell you the process can evolve, and I attached my criteria in the chat as well, so you have that. And if you left me your email, I can send you these documents, but I've attached them all in here in terms of the bios and their contact information. Let's see. It really is up to you guys to reach out to these ladies if it makes sense for you. So, and if you want to follow up with me to learn more about the monthly mastermind that I have around this topic and actually making progress, then you have my info. So, our last thing, you might want to take out your phone so you can capture a QR code or grab a pen to write down the URL, because Murray said there'd be a free gift if you stayed until the end of the discussion. This QR code or this URL will get you my book for free. It's Welcome to the Next Level. Just take a picture of it, fill out that, and you can download it. And now if there are any other questions, we can put them in the chat window. I want to thank the panelists for joining me for this important discussion to take control of your finances. Just again, Tatiana and Horning and Raymond James. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sonia.
Hope Feller of Northwestern Mutual. Thank you.
Thank you. It was lots of fun.
And Jennifer Belmont Jennings of Hightower Advisors. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Let's see. Any other questions? I just wanted to look through the questions really quick to see, because I think there was one setting up savings with high yield interest. Yeah, I think you just have to look around. Like, my brokerage one is different. My bank account is different. The credit union is different. I think you just have to do a little bit of research to figure that out. And the plan that you put in place, if high yield accounts are part of that, then you're going to have to take recommendations as well as doing research. So I think that's important. Let's see. Okay. Well, thank you. I don't want to run over too much on time. I want to say I appreciate everybody for your interest in this important topic and taking control of your finances. And then don't forget to follow up as appropriate for whoever you think can help you meet your goals. So thank you.